This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 233, where today CJ and I are going to sit back and take a look at our 2017 predictions and wishes and look forward to 2018 predictions, wishes, and thoughts. Recorded live Thursday, January the 4th, 2018. Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focused on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make that happen. With the Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out for free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/trynwc. Ha, I was worried I was going to say 2017. Hey, CJ.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, man. How are you doing?
Very well, my friend. How are you doing in this 2018? Had a few days of it.
Dude, I'm cold.
What's going on down there, man?
It's colder in Florida than it is in Alaska right now, man.
It's not often that that's the case.
Oh, I tell you, I was in Orlando the last 2 days, just little vacation stuff, and part of my kid's Christmas present was to go see some stuff and spend time down at the parks and see some family. And we had to kind of tweak our plans a little bit to make sure we got home before it got dark because there was a winter storm that came through. It rained a ton all throughout the day, and we wanted to make sure we got home before it dipped below freezing because I'm not going to try to drive on... I don't know how to drive in the snow or on ice, especially in my nice car. I'm not about to do it.
So. Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know what's going on down there. It snowed here at Christmas, but then I've heard it snowed somewhere in Florida too.
Yeah, it snowed in Tallahassee, so about 2 hours west of me. We got some flurries and stuff, but yeah, it accumulated just south of us. It's funny because if you looked at the map and it showed like where the freezing line was, it's almost like it just carved out Jacksonville. It's like going, you're going to get the wet part and everybody to the west and north is going to get the cold part, which is fine with me. But I mean, yeah, I'm sitting here and it's noon and I'm still at 37 degrees Fahrenheit, which is just crazy.
Yeah, that's kind of chilly.
Anyway.
Hey, well, you get in Seattle weather right now, man.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the temperature here right now as well.
Hey, I live in Florida for to not look at this cold weather, all right?
Oh, hopefully it won't last for too long.
Yeah. How about you, man?
Good. Yeah, recovering after the New Year break and or Christmas and New Year and the kids are back in school and all of that. So getting back into the swing of things, really.
Very cool.
Catching up on a bunch of things that I've put off and all that sort of stuff. So yes, the kids are back in school and no longer driving us crazy. With, you know, kids are great. They go on holiday, they love it for a while. And then, you know, after a little while, they just start going at each other, like picking and poking at each other, like, you know, stirring each other up, so to speak. And so eventually you're like, cool, now I'm stoked you're back in school, you're back with your friends, and you're not just sitting there trying to wind each other up and fight.
Yep. Let's get back to my kids are still out of school for the remainder of this week. And I agree with you. I mean, we're sitting there and you look at it, I have multiple conversations with both of them the last few days, like going, that's called picking and taking it too far.
No, yeah.
That's just trying to get under your sister's skin just to get her eyes out of her. But I didn't do anything. You did do something. Go.
Yeah. Oh, dear. So, yeah, other than that, yeah, just trying to get back on top of things and getting stuck into the year.
Yeah, exactly. But hey, you got to love it how this year started with one hell of a bit of news that this is not a news show, but holy crap, man. This year, 2018 brings you a 30% performance hit to your computer.
Isn't this crazy? This is possibly, there's been a lot of really bad malware in the world the last wee while. Like, well, yeah, I guess last wee while, but also, you know, like SQL Slammer and all that sort of stuff, right? Like there were some pretty bad worms and bits of malware, but this puppy vulnerability, it's not a worm yet, right? There are worms and malware that'll take advantage of it, but this vulnerability is just unreal. Like I don't even have words.
I'm not as versed on it as I should be because, of course, the news comes out right when I go on vacation with the family. And so I'm trying to read it. My wife's like, why are you always on your phone? I'm like, I'm not on Facebook. I'm not on Twitter. I'm not on email. I'm trying to understand what the hell is going on because I thought it was one thing. It looks like there's two things. And then Intel jumped out. And I'm like, but yep. I know you spent a little, we have a link that we'll put in the show notes for this, but you spent a little more time. You can explain it to our listeners probably a little bit better than I can.
Sure. Yeah, I'll give you an analogy in a second. But so what we're talking about is that Codenames Meltdown Inspector for a style of vulnerability that has been exposed in basically all Intel chips for the last 10 years or so, and some AMD chips and some chips as well. And each of them behave a little differently in terms of the vulnerabilities that are available on each of the different chips. But in a nutshell, it is baked into the hardware in such a way that it can't be fixed without a replacement of a processor. The only viable fix for Meltdown, which is the major one that's primarily vulnerable on Intel chips, is an OS change for the way the operating system handles memory with processors. And it means that it has to deal with memory differently, and that has a performance impact. And they're saying, depending on the workload and the type of applications and how many applications you're running at the time, it could be anywhere from 10 to 30% performance impact, which gamers are completely furious about, you know, because they do everything in their power to try and optimize their performance. But, you know, gamers, I mean, I'm a bit of a gamer. I don't, yeah. I would rather be safe than have two more FPS, right? You know, the implications of this are pretty phenomenal. Like, if you can't get the throughput you desire or have planned for on a particular piece of hardware, that can have pretty serious consequences. Mm. So Spectre is a variant of the attack, or the attack vector, I should say, and is far more serious. And as far as I'm aware, currently it can't be. There is no patch to solve this one, I think. But anyway, so my analogy. All right, so AC, say you have gone to the library, and it's a very private library. I got this analogy off Reddit, by the way. I didn't make this up.
Okay.
I can't claim credit for this. Say you've gone to a library, and it's a really private library, and all of their members, your list of books that you've gotten out is kept private, right? So I can't walk in and go, hey, what books has AC got out, right? So that's private information that only you want to know about or want to keep, and between you and the library. But I want to know what books you've got out, right? So the way that this attack vector works is I watch you go to the library, and you go into the library and you drop off some books, and then you go about your business and you leave the library. I go straight in after you at a particular timing after you've been in, and I've got to test this timing. So I test the library to see how long I need to leave it, or how short I need to leave that period of time. But I go in and I go straight up to the librarian at the front and I say, hey, I'd like to put a copy of book A on hold. And the librarian, depending on how long it takes the librarian to go find that book, will tell me whether you've returned that book and whether you had that book out. So if I go up to the librarian and say, hey, I'd like book A, and they say, oh, that's really interesting. I've got one right here on the counter. I know you just dropped that book off. Whereas if it takes her 5 minutes to go find the book in the shelves, that you didn't have the book out. So that's how I go find out what books you've got on loan, right? Or which books you had on loan. And I can start finding out pieces of private information that I shouldn't really have had access to. That's kind of the analogy, is somebody who wants to exploit this can use a technique that modern processors use called speculative execution, which means that processors execute some instructions thinking that the program is about to do those, but when in actual fact it doesn't do them, and then the attacker is able to read the data left behind from those speculative instructions, which can include data they shouldn't have access to from like kernel memory and stuff. So, for example, in the Chrome case or a browser case, that might be passwords from the browser that a piece of code shouldn't have access to. Now, this all requires somebody to be able to run malicious code on your machine to begin with. But the problem is like every day we see vulnerabilities that let zero-day exploits happen, especially through browsers. And so one of the cases that they showed for Meltdown was just visiting a website, running some JavaScript, and hoovering up passwords off your processor. And normally, you know, there are multiple levels of defense for this sort of stuff. Part of it's in the browser, part of it's in the operating system, part of it's physically baked into the chips to stop you from getting access to different people's memory and all that sort of stuff, right? Different areas of memory. Unfortunately, when all three fail, there's nothing stopping you.
Yeah.
So it is a really, real big issue. And all operating systems are vulnerable. Linux, Mac OS, Windows being the big ones, right? Mm-hmm. All of them have patches that are rolling out to use different techniques to try and avoid this or get around Meltdown. But unfortunately, it has those performance implications from what I understand. And so also, hey, this is the cloud show. All clouds are vulnerable to this too. And all the cloud vendors have been madly scrambling to patch this vulnerability. And what's interesting is like about a week ago, I got a notice for forced maintenance in Azure that was coming up on the 9th of January, which is a few days before we recorded this. And I thought, oh, interesting. Okay, well, I would rather manually do that maintenance and reboot the virtual machines that we have than them randomly happening with Azure doing them. And so I scheduled maintenance for the day before yesterday, which was Tuesday the 2nd, and I did our manual maintenance of reboots. And then yesterday, the cat got out of the bag, let's just say that. And there were various researchers and various publications that started publishing information about this, and the horse bolted. And so the crowd that were responsible for finding these vulnerabilities had to publish, basically, so that everybody was open and aware of what was going on, because people would be able to start taking advantage of the vulnerability, which, of course, none of the major vendors were expecting this disclosure to happen until the 9th of January, mm-hmm. by which stage all of their forced maintenance would have occurred and everybody would have been fine. Anyway, so the vulnerability got disclosed yesterday. All the cloud vendors are madly scrambling to get up to scratch. And so Microsoft pulled their forced maintenance forward from the 9th of January in Azure, mm-hmm. and in Windows. Windows 10 got a forced patch pushed yesterday that you had no choice over. It got installed, forced patched and pushed yesterday. And then Azure, we all got an email yesterday saying, oh yeah, you know that maintenance we said was going to happen on the 9th that you could manually do? Well, we've just letting you know that we've started doing it regardless anyway now. And that was yesterday, the 3rd of January. So I was watching Reddit and Twitter last night, and there were a lot of sysadmins up all night last night watching their VMs rebooting and making sure that all their systems were working correctly and coming back up. And AWS has been doing the same, and Google, I believe, has already done it. What's interesting about the timeline of this, right, is the researchers disclosed this to Intel and a lot of the major vendors back in June of, I think, June 1. Yeah, June the 1st, 2017. So this has been around for 6 months, and they've managed to coordinate non-disclosure for up until this point, which is, it's phenomenal. Like, you just can't have that many people involved and not have something like this leak. But anyway, it eventually, a few days before, got disclosed and started leaking and started hitting the press and all this. And so they were kind of forced into disclosure early.
It really has been fascinating. I mean, the little bit that I've read, you know, and you kind of put pieces together from the last few days where it looks like it's first started to kind of leak out when there were some commits from the Linux distros, yes. but they all had their comments all redacted.
Yep.
So people were like, well, wait a minute, what is this about? And then you had some blog come up and it was popping to the top of Hacker News and it's popping to the top of Reddit. I started looking at some of this, you're kind of picking through some of it like, oh, this is interesting. And it kind of foretold of something really big that was to come. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I was like, well, why didn't Intel say anything about it? It's like, well, Intel even said, well, we had everything scheduled to go live and be public about it next week. Mm-hmm. But then the cat started really coming out of the bag really early. And so, like you said, I mean, I saw lots of people up in arms about Azure VMs all of a sudden starting to reboot yesterday. And you see something like this. I mean, from a news perspective, just from an industry perspective, I mean, we're all in the same boat with this. And we all kind of look at Azure. We look at Intel. We look at AMD. We look at the guys that make the chips. And we're like going, you know, it was a design flaw that's caused this, a hardware design flaw that's caused this. And yeah. Everybody kind of looks at it and they're kind of pissed at them. And then it's going to be interesting to see the fallout for the next, you know, a few weeks about this, where, I mean, we saw something where the Intel CEO sold a ton of stock back in September when they knew it was coming. And is that legit? Mm-hmm. Is it not legit? And I don't know. It's it's pretty interesting. It's just the one thing we can all agree on. It's like, hey, look, this was a big deal. We're all in this together. And yeah, it sucks, but there's really nothing you can do about it. But just, you know, take it on the chin and being like, oh, welcome to the computer world.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a really interesting one because it sort of affects everybody equally. You know, it's not like this is a Microsoft problem or a Google problem or an Apple problem or what have you, right? It's like everybody's pretty hosed.
Yeah. I mean, it's the saying that I like to use, or somebody told me this once. It's like, it's not fair. It's not unfair. It's equally unfair to everybody.
Yeah. Your point about the Linux kernel patches were really interesting, right? Because, yeah, the story goes that the folks that control the commits to the Linux kernel, it's a pretty tight-knit group, they were very obscure about the changes that were being made to the kernel and redacted the comments, which is very unlike them, right? Like their whole ethos is about open and transparent, but they realized the implications of how serious this was. And so as they were making the changes, they were obfuscating comments or redacting comments. But there were researchers around the world watching those patches going in and sort of reverse engineering them and going, why are they doing this and what happened? And so I believe that some of the disclosure came from those people that weren't initially involved in the vulnerability, and people just started seeing it, and then news started spreading, and then it hit the major publications eventually, and just things went out of control. So
that was the part that I found to be the most interesting, was watching when you saw those come out and seeing some of the blog posts going, this really hints at some major security vulnerability. But when I first read about it, which I don't know, maybe like late December or the first day or two of January, I first started to look at it, and you see people talking about it, and that looked like it was just isolated to Linux, which is still a big deal, right? But you're looking at it, and then it starts kind of, the package starts to get unwrapped, and you're like, holy crap, this is a big deal. And then Intel comes clean. And
ARM as well, right? Oh. ARM and AMD, they're not as vulnerable as Intel, but they are vulnerable to certain variants of the attack. And, you know, between Intel, AMD, and ARM, I don't know what the percentage is, but I'd be surprised if it wasn't more than 98% of processors in the world.
Agreed. Yeah, that's nuts.
Now, I mean, without Spark and all that sort of stuff. But anyway, interesting.
Mm, crazy.
Kind of crazy. Yeah, so if your computer's suddenly slow all of a sudden, you might know why.
Yeah. Make sure you reboot your computer.
That's right.
There was one more thing I wanted to mention too before we move on to doing our predictions and stuff. And that is Alex Pierce, who's an Office 365 MVP. He's running a survey around Office 365 education that's running through the course of January and the first week of February. It's a public survey. So it's 25 multiple choice questions. He's going to pull these together and have some real fancy, snazzy Power BI report that he's going to end up publishing as well, so that everyone can see what these results are. I got a link to it in the show notes if you just go take a look at it, or if you want to try and type it in, this is all lowercase, it's bit.ly/edusurvey2018.
Nice.
All right. So, CJ, how about we look at our picks from 2017, or sorry, not
yes, our predictions
and wishes, and how about we see how we did?
Yeah, let's see how we did.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by ShareGate. ShareGate makes it easier for organizations to adopt and use the latest Microsoft productivity tools, helping millions of users be happier and more productive at work. ShareGate is trusted by over 10,000 IT admins from over 110 countries to manage, migrate, and secure their SharePoint and Office 365 environments. ShareGate is recognized as the must-have tool for day-to-day administration of on-premises, cloud, and hybrid environments. Interested in learning more? Check them out on ShareGate.com to learn how ShareGate can make you more productive. Okay, so we're going to run through this kind of quick because we want to make sure we have time for 2018, but we'll see how well did we do or how poorly we did, and then if our wishes came true. So how about I'll do yours. I'll read out your predictions, and you kind of evaluate yourself and see how you did, then I'll let you do me. So
okay, sounds good.
Your first prediction was bots and AI rise in the enterprise and become more important.
It's certainly heading in that direction. I think bots in the enterprise haven't really taken off yet. I think they're starting, you know, the momentum is still building. AI for sure is starting to go completely nuts, right? So yeah, maybe not so much on bots, but definitely more on AI.
Agreed. I'll give you that one. Your second one was self-driving takes off with Uber and trucks. Uber was definitely self-driving this year.
Uber was definitely self-driving. They didn't have a CEO at the wheel.
I'm sure that's what one of your predictions was.
Yeah. So we're seeing fleets of trucks that are self-driving and things like that. That's probably not as widespread as I would have liked or would have predicted, I guess. Again, I think I'm probably behind where I thought the wave would be. But you know, there's more and more players in the space and there's more people doing tests in different cities. And now there's places where like Uber will pick you up in a car that doesn't have a driver, but there's a driver sitting in the passenger seat, stuff like that. So we're getting there.
Yeah, we're definitely getting there. All right, your last prediction was LinkedIn integration. Very little was delivered.
I agree with this.
I do too.
I think the first wave of integration has been delivered or is starting to be delivered with like contact card integration and things like that. But honestly, it's not so much integration as it, well, it is integration, but it's not quite the level of integration that I think people are expecting. Mm. So they're surfacing LinkedIn information in different places, which is great, you know, in contact cards and stuff. But there's no sort of deep levels of integration that really take advantage of all that LinkedIn data yet. I don't doubt that we will see it. I just think we're not going to see it for a while.
Yeah, I agree with that. Personally, I like the fact that we had very little delivered, that they're very much dipping their toes into the integration. And we're starting to see like public stuff being integrated and then deeper stuff. I mean, I think it's the right direction because that is, it's a little quote unquote scary to,
sure,
to have that much of my professional data and my personal data getting mixed together by potentially accessible to my company. So
yeah, for sure. No, that makes sense. Okay, I see. Are you ready for your predictions?
I am.
Okay, your first one, Microsoft, year of machine learning, cognitive services, and analytics.
I give myself probably like a half to a three-quarter point on this because I think that they really pushed forward on this quite a bit. The part that I didn't see that I expected was more kind of real-world application for this. They've definitely done a lot of stuff in this space. It's definitely been a big deal for them, but it's the real-world application for the machine learning and the AI stuff that I haven't really seen. I mean, we didn't see, like, they have their Harman Kardon Alexa port thing, but
yeah.
I mean, it's not, the people I know that have it aren't very impressed with it, and so, I don't know, I give myself kind of a...
Dude, I think you're being pretty harsh on yourself.
I usually am.
I think Microsoft have been crushing the ML and cognitive services stuff this year. Maybe not the applications of it or the solutions using it, but certainly the capabilities for developers and businesses to use, and it's been the biggest ticket news items all year from them, and they've got pretty good range of services to back it up. So I think you've been a little harsh on yourself there with definitely not half a point, definitely not three quarters of a point. I'd go the whole point.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll take it.
Okay, number two, Apple, more of the same, response to consumers goes in wrong direction.
I'm happy that I think that in my opinion, I missed this because I thought that Apple did a pretty good job with the response to the big things that were in my mind were the MacBook Pro. They came out with a new version of the MacBook Pro that had the updated CPU, that had the updated GPU, didn't go 32 gigs of RAM, but frankly, I don't think that you need that on a MacBook unless you are wanting to do VMs. And then, well, frankly, I mean, I think that was an issue for me in the past. Now I would rather be doing my VMs in the cloud anyway. So, but I thought that on the MacBook, they did a good job there. On their big desktop machine, they did a really good job with that one in terms of responding to like the Microsoft Surface Studio, whatever that one's called, with their big iMac that came out late in 2018. You know, it's incredibly expensive. That's what Apple does, but it's also incredibly powerful. And while we didn't see an update to it yet, they at least, in very uncharacteristic Apple fashion, the Mac Pro, the trash can, they admitted the issues that they had with that design. And they talked about what they were doing and the changes that were coming. But basically, they said, look, here's what we recognize. Here's what we're doing. This is not everything, but we're not ready to talk about it yet. We have a lot more work to do, and you'll see more about it in early 2018. So I personally am going to give them two thumbs up on this one to show that, you know, they've gone in the right direction. The only disappointing thing that I have with them this year, to be honest, is how expensive the latest iPhone is. I think it's ridiculous how... I think the 10 is awesome from a capabilities, experience, everything. But I would have a very hard time spending that money on a phone. So,
yeah, I did. And I think it's stupid tax, but anyway.
There you go.
it's a great phone, don't get me wrong, but I don't know if it's incrementally that great above the 8. So anywho, all right. So so more of the same in response to consumers goes in the wrong direction. Do you give yourself a half for that, do you think?
No, I didn't even give myself a half for it. I think I totally missed it. I thought they did a good job this year.
Gotcha. Huh, interesting. Okay, third one. Twitter, future will finally be clear.
This is a big miss.
You could make the argument it's totally the opposite.
Well,
because I'm pretty much sure the only reason Twitter's surviving right now is because Trump's on there.
Okay, as somebody who uses Twitter on the marketing side and trying to generate traffic and everything, you know what's funny?
Yeah.
I think Twitter's use is very clear for me, but as a business, I still don't get their business. I don't understand their business model. Like, everything that I get out of Twitter, I get none of it by paying for it. And when I try to pay for it, it, not just me, but I see other people, when you try to pay for it, like pin tweets and advertising stuff, I don't get the response I get from it when I do it with LinkedIn or when I get it with Facebook. But the free side of it, oh my God. I mean, it's like, it's incredible on the free side. And that's, so I kind of look at it going, well, how are you guys going to charge? How are you guys going to make money? And to me, it's a service that would be great as part of another offering, like as part of a Facebook offering. But I don't know. I think that the future for Twitter is very unclear as far as a business goes. The future in terms of usage, totally clear to me. But as far as a business, they're not in this as a charity. So
no, I do completely agree. I was kind of being a bit facetious with the, with the I'm pretty sure that he's only the one propping them up. But yeah, no, I think you're right. You know, it's been a pretty sort of a no-op of a year for them in terms of clarity around the business future for them. So
yeah,
I'm sure they would disagree with that. But yeah, from where I sit, I'm with you.
Yeah. Okay. Now let's do wishes, our 2017 wishes, and see, did we get what we wanted or not?
Yeah, let's see.
All right. Mr. CJ, your first one, Office 365 integration and simplification versus more junk in the trunk.
I give myself partial delivery on the wish. I think integration and simplification with the Microsoft Graph has been really good. There's more services through the Graph, Teams, APIs, and group stuff, and all sorts of things. So I think the integration and simplification has been really nice. From the developer side, I think more junk in the trunk. They have slowed a little down on this, but you know, you could argue Teams has muddied the water with Yammer quite a lot, and that's sort of creating a bit of junk in the trunk. They've come up with this fantastic marketing around like inner and outer loops or circles or some shit. And you can't see this, but there's a lot of hand waving going on. But like, I mean, they're doing a great job of trying to explain it, but it's a little dubious if you ask me.
Yeah. So your second one that you had was around Azure subscription management, that it was going to be made simple and easy.
Bum, bum.
Yeah. Still wishing.
One can hope, but no, my life around my Azure subscription management has only gotten worse. So I definitely can't say I got that one at all.
Yeah. How about the next one is, oh, I remember this one too. Just for behind the scenes, we went and found these about 10 minutes before we did. I found our notes about 10 minutes before we started recording this. I remember when we went through this and I was like, oh man, I wish you were going to go political and Trumpy on those.
Yeah.
But here we go.
I'll try to be short about my answer for this one.
The U.S. focuses on what's important in facts versus a total circus.
If there's one thing I could have asked for that could not have been delivered worse, this is probably it.
Yeah.
Let's just leave it at that.
Thank you.
What a complete debacle. Anyway. Okay, I see. Your wishes. Office 365, simplify options, tasks, forums, and external users.
So this is different than what you had about the integration simplification.
Yeah.
Mine was more like, how many different task apps do we need? How many different forums do we need? How many different external user solutions do we need? And man, I didn't get, if I could have gotten, this is the lowest of the wishes of what I would have wanted of, I think, all six of them that we had here. Even your one about the US focuses on, you know, facts and certain stuff. This tasks, I mean, we saw an announcement for the new Microsoft, I think it was called To Do. And that was like in the summer. We didn't see anything from them. Like, oh, here's our MVP. I'm like, yeah, but you got to ship something else and like at least something. And I don't know, I'm really disappointed with that. Forums, it's still a shotgun of just which group wants to put your forums in different places. Somebody wants to use the tech community. Somebody wants to use Yammer. Somebody wants to use, I don't know.
Stack.
Yeah, Stack Overflow, all this stuff. And then as far as external users go, you and I, we joked about this. I kind of went off the cuff and I might have offended somebody in a Facebook group that you and I are in, but oh, you should do everything in Teams. I'm like, God, what is this? Like the Swiss Army knife for everybody at Microsoft now. It's like, let's put it in Teams. Like going, well, if you only want, just like Yammer, if you don't want to find it and you want to leave it just to all your people, go for it. But if you're external, anyway.
Yeah, I like to think of this as like when all you've got is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And
I think that was my comment on Facebook.
There you go. Yeah, Teams is not the magic bullet for everything. It's a great tool, but just that, yeah.
Slack's not dead. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay, so your second one, Office 365, more focus for small and startup business employees, contractors who aren't in the...
Organization,
there you go.
I'll give myself a slight tick above my last one, which is a complete miss.
I think it was a wish. You could be a it can be a very unlikely wish, but yeah.
I came closer to unicorn, to wishing for a unicorn.
Yeah, fair enough.
So this one, I mean, I think you said something that was, I've used this quote so many times now since you said it, and I don't remember what episode it was, but sometime in the second half of 2017, you made a comment on the show that Google stuff is more for the individual, which also applies to like the entrepreneur and the small business, where Microsoft stuff is about the enterprise. And then the other audiences for each one of those companies is an afterthought. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the way I approach Office 365 and everything Microsoft, with the exception of Azure, to be that way, where it is, if you're not part of the organization, if you're a small business, you're not the target audience. I mean, I'm not the target audience for Office 365. I mean, a lot of their services, they're fantastic for a huge, you know, for big companies or for even medium-sized companies, companies with a couple, you know, 100 people that work for them or 50 people. But for the individual, it still doesn't seem like the right, it still is not a good solution for the great solution for those people. So
yeah, fair enough.
Anyway.
Okay. And your third one, Apple, get back to hardware revolution roots, Mac Pro, MacBook, MacBook Pro.
Yeah, kind of like the prediction where my prediction was it wasn't going to happen, but I was hoping that it would. And I'm glad I got my prediction wrong. I got my wish.
Yay!
So there we go. So that kind of worked.
You got a whole suite of new stuff.
I got a whole suite of new stuff coming. Almost. And we get promise of a new Mac Pro. I'm curious to see what that thing looks like, or at least the cost and everything. But at any rate, cool. Well, that's 2017. We've wrapped it up. Now you want to do 2018?
Let's do it.
While many IT teams struggle with the impact of deploying Office 365, Zscaler customers are experiencing 40% or greater network performance across file download times, as well as TCP and DNS connection times, compared to using next-gen firewalls and UTMs to route Office 365 traffic locally to the internet. While you may know Zscaler as the leader in cloud security, they also have hundreds of customers who are processing over 1.2 petabytes of Office 365 traffic monthly through the Zscaler cloud. Visit www.zscaler.com to learn more.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, and maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery, from individual items to entire team sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com.
Okay, so let's talk about 2018 predictions and wishes. And let's do this in the same format that we did in the last one, where I'll kind of go with your prediction. I'll let you kind of explain a little bit of it, and then you can kind of tackle me. And then we'll move on to wishes. So Sounds good. We've got a few picks at the very end.
Nice.
All right. Actually, we're going to fight about a pick too, I think.
We're going to talk about a pick for sure.
Yeah. Okay, so for predictions, your first predictions is new cloud for enterprises, Oracle or IBM?
Yep. My bet is Oracle enters the market for cloud and enterprise like an Azure for business.
So yep. Public cloud.
Yep.
Wow, that's a big one.
I've had a number of conversations with people that have been interesting discussions where the folks that I've chatted with have agreed that, or we've agreed with each other, that Microsoft has nothing to lose in cloud enterprise, has everything to lose in enterprise cloud computing. AWS has everything to lose in startup and consumer side of the house, but Microsoft has everything to lose in the enterprise side of cloud computing. And that Oracle is Oracle or IBM, probably Oracle. Oracle is too savvy to let that market waste and just be Microsoft's for the taking. Coupled that with a number of interesting hires they've been making recently that I've noticed, some folks leaving Microsoft and going to Oracle, where at the time, you know, this was a few months ago now, at the time I sat myself down and I was like scratching my head like, why on earth would you go from there to there? And it didn't make sense to me at the time. And then subsequently, thinking about this a little deeper, only rational explanation. Occam's razor, the simplest explanation is often the most likely, right? Is that they're off building a cloud.
That's interesting you say that. I mean, you even saw, do you put some of the moves they've made on licensing, changes they made, where it's kind of like they've kicked yeah. the other public clouds in the shin with some of their Oracle licensing, that they could be kind of making it where, hey, if you're Oracle, you really want to be using our cloud instead of using one of these other big vendors' public clouds.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go that far. I'm not sure if it's, I don't know if that's setting themselves up for a great cloud debut or it's just them wringing the coffers, so to speak, and making as much money as they possibly can. I just think that Microsoft is going to be the only, not the only, will be the predominant number one player in enterprise cloud computing, and that Larry is not that silly and will not leave all of that money on the table for Microsoft to take.
That's interesting. That'll be interesting to see how that plays out over the next 12 months.
Yeah. At 12 months, I think it's going to be interesting to see if they can deliver that fast, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Okay. So your next prediction was around blockchain, and you have blockchain crypto. I'm guessing you mean cryptocurrency.
Well, no, just sort of the concepts behind blockchain and cryptography behind it.
Okay. Yeah. So enterprise use here?
Yeah, exactly. So legitimate uses for blockchain in the enterprise.
I gotcha.
I don't know what the use is, but like, it's a hammer everybody's wielding. I'm sure somebody's going to find a solution.
Microsoft's got some like public services around like hosted blockchain. So, I mean.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like one of those things that it's a solution looking for a problem, right? And I think people will find problems to solve with it eventually in the enterprise this year. Obviously, cryptocurrency is going crazy at the moment. It's very topical, but the underlying technology is pretty interesting. It's just that nobody's really found a fully legitimate use for it yet that couldn't be solved another way. But in the enterprise, I think there is some interesting scenarios. So yeah, my take is that I think enterprise will start investing in blockchain this year for good or bad, right or wrong. We'll see.
Well, that's a good one. And then your last one is Apple phone dominance slides.
I just think that to our earlier point in the show about iPhone, the iPhone 10, or the iPhone X, whichever way you want to call it, they kind of jumped the shark a bit. Like, it feels like they've made a nice phone, but it's not vastly differentiated anymore. Mm-mm. There isn't anything that the iPhone 10 does that's magical and special over and above everybody else. And there always used to be. The iPhones, right? There always used to be something. Like, it's not that other phones didn't have certain features or were like 90% of the way there, but they always had something. And I just feel like they don't have that something anymore.
Let me challenge you on this one, just to get a little bit deeper on it. So how do you see this? A lot of the people that are like Android fans or Samsung fans would say that, well, this has been going on for a while. I've been able to do wireless charging with my phone. I've been able to have the, you know, beveled screen. I've been able to do the equivalent Apple Pay, but like the NFC type payment and everything like that with my Samsung phone. How do you see that being different going forward on the dominance? You see them just losing more market share to Android, or?
Yeah, I just think there'll be better competitors that step up to an iPhone. So when you've got to go make your decision, am I going to upgrade to the iPhone 11 or the Samsung Foo, whatever that happens to be, that there may be a tipping point where the features don't matter and it's enough that you're willing to leave an ecosystem over. Maybe it's cost. Maybe it's the features are the same, but the cost is a lot less. Or maybe some of those other players add additional features or capabilities to the phone that is enough to tip you across an ecosystem. I got to tell you, like, if it wasn't for my wife being on iPhone, I probably would have leapt to Android. I don't know if I would have enjoyed it and I may be back, who knows, but I think I would have given it a shot. The only thing keeping me on iPhone is iMessage.
See, it's funny you say that because like for me, I've always kind of like chided against the whole Apple fanboy kind of a thing. Say, no, I'm not an Apple fanboy. But yet here I sit with my iPad, my iPhone, my Apple Watch, and my MacBook.
But it just works, right?
Well, like, and that's the thing. It does. It just works. I mean, the fact that my texts, I don't text on my phone. I text on my laptop or I text on my iPad. I love the fact that I can copy something from my phone and then paste it from my laptop. And I know that Windows does some of that stuff, right? But living...
But it all just works.
Yeah, living in one ecosystem, there's something to be said for that. And you know, I'm willing to pay... It's not the reason I pay the premium, but I'm willing to pay the premium for that being one of the aspects.
Well, I think it's that coupled with really good hardware. Like some would argue, oh, you can get better value for money. Yes, you can. But I very rarely have problems with my MacBook, if at all. I've had it for a couple of years and it's never caused me any issues. Things like that. So I think it's total cost of ownership. Mm-hmm. For me, as I'm getting older, I am less desire to fix tech problems. And I think the Apple ecosystem helps me with that, which is weird because that's not how I've been in the past. I've just become more and more grumpy as I've gotten older and not been prepared to deal with the crap.
Well, no, I think, you know, I'm the same way, right? I mean, I feel the exact same way about it where, you know, we got a comment from somebody the other day, or I got an email from somebody the other day. I don't know if it came in through our shared mailbox we have for the podcast or if it just came to me. Somebody was reflecting on like the smart things stuff that we've been talking about and the Hue bulbs. And I kind of complained a little bit in a recent episode. And they're like, yeah, you know, the reason I kind of gravitated around to the person who wrote this, you know, I'm not slamming your post here. I'm just kind of, and that's why I'm not going to mention your name because I don't want it to come across that way. But you were like, you know, oh yeah, you know, I didn't go with smart things because there's not as much kind of tinkerability that you can have to this kind of stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I get that. And you go, you could write a, you know, simple, you know, script that goes through and calls a REST API and do exactly what you want to do. I'm like, I get that. But that's not what I want to spend my time doing dev on. That's not what I want to spend my time tinkering with. That's one of those things. I just want that to work. I wanted to build something to do complete automation with my fish tank and a bunch of stuff in the house and all that before. I was going to use a Raspberry Pi for it. But it was also going to take me a lot of time to build it. If stuff broke, I was going to have to figure it out. The wife acceptance factor wasn't going to be as high. And I'm like, you know what? I'd rather pay a little bit more and just have shit work.
Absolutely. Especially when it comes to lights in your house and switches on the wall and stuff. I do not ever want to have to be debugging my light switches. Let's put it that way.
Hey, I was in Orlando last week, and the last thing I wanted to do was be like, oh, crap, a coffee pot just turned on, and I'm not home, and there's nothing in the coffee pot. I'm like, I don't need that doing that. So I just jump on my phone, shut it off.
Anyway. Okay, so those are my predictions. New cloud for the enterprise from Oracle or IBM, blockchain and crypto in the enterprise, and iPhone dominance slides.
Cool.
Should we talk about your predictions, AC?
Bring it on. I got one that's not techie.
Okay, go for it.
Stock market correction.
Ooh.
We're going to finally see something. We are in the longest...
Yeah, bull market ever, right?
Bull. Yeah, I get bear and bull mixed up. But we're in the longest bull market ever. And we were due for a bit of a correction. And the market has really... It really liked the direction that the election went in, I guess you would say. Mm-hmm. The U.S. election went in. But we haven't seen a correction yet. We've seen a little slide here, a little slide there, but we have not seen a true correction. So I would expect that this year we are going to see a correction. I'm very glad that I was not one of the naysayers last year and pull all my money out of the stock market and put it in cash because I was able to reap the benefits from the takeoff from last year. I'm not saying that we're going to see like a global recession. We're going to see a U.S. recession. We're going to see a big unemployment dip. I just think that we're going to see a pullback of what, maybe 10, 20. I think what they call a correction is officially like what, a 20% or
15%? Oh, really? I don't know.
So we'll see some sort of a correction there. So of course I should have a hard number there to be able to measure it, but we don't keep a tight score on our prediction, so that's okay.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll see. I have nothing to add to that. Like I you're right though. It's been a really long bull market. One of the longest ever, I believe. Second longest so far.
I think it's the longest.
Close to the first, yeah. Must be, yeah. So typically they go in cycles, so we'll see.
Yeah.
All right, number two.
Number two is cryptocurrency matures. So you went blockchain. I love how some of our stuff, we don't even communicate our predictions to each other, yet we come up with similar stuff. So with cryptocurrency matures, I think that what we're going to see here is not so much more people getting interested in Bitcoin, Litecoin, Ethereum, Bitcoin Cash. That's not what I mean by that. I mean that we're going to see more of a maturity in the marketplace. For example, we've already seen one move, in the last week or two of 2017, where JP Morgan Chase said that they were going to create a cryptocurrency trading desk and they were going to add it to one of their current divisions. And they haven't said which one it was going to be, or maybe they did and I tuned it out. But it was just the same way that you have like a foreign currency trading thing, buying and selling the yen or the dollar or the euro, stuff like that.
Mm.
I think that we'll see a little bit more of that. We're starting to see things like the SEC in the United States taking a lot more action on IOCs, on initial coin offerings, initial offering coins, ICOs, initial coin offerings. So I think we'll just see a little bit more maturity in that space. Hopefully we'll see a little bit of the volatility disappear, but that's my, I guess, part of a wish there is to see the volatility disappear. But I would like to see a little bit more of the maturity in the cryptocurrency stuff. I definitely think it's here to stay for a very long time. I don't think it's going to disappear anytime soon.
Yeah, fair enough.
If at all.
Yeah. I think you're probably right. It'll be interesting to see legit uses and whether normal people pick it up.
My last prediction is going to be around AI and machine learning, and we're going to see it take off more in the real world for applications. So I think that we're going to see things like, we'll see a lot more like real world application and a lot of things that come more into our daily lives, things that are a little bit more useful when it comes to the stuff that we see in our phones or stuff that we see in our emails or stuff that we see in our calendar. Today, there's still some gimmicky stuff, but this may not be really that much of a prediction because we're starting to see that like with being able to have some Microsoft's machine learning looking at a video and pulling out when people spoke at a keynote at a conference and what the topics were, automatically extracting that stuff. I mean, that stuff's already there today. So I think we'll see more, less like API-ish kind of stuff that's low-level stuff, but making it a lot more usable to the average developer or the lay developer that can take advantage of it in their own applications.
Yeah, gotcha. Nice.
Those are my predictions.
I like them. Should we move on to some wishes?
We got to move on to some wishes. We got a heck of an episode here we're doing today, huh?
Certainly.
All right. Your first wish.
SPFX.
SharePoint
framework. Kind of the name is going to screw it up, isn't it? But my wish is that all Office 365 UI extensibility, Teams, SharePoint, and Outlook, that it's all done by one framework.
That's a big wish.
Chances of it paying off, almost 0%. I still wish it will happen. I just wish that there was a consolidated, unified way of extending the UI across the Office 365 ecosystem that wasn't in the typical Microsoft shipping the org chart fashion, all separate. So, they're doing more. The SPFX is doing more around what you can extend and things, but still very much primarily focused at least on SharePoint. You know, some of the work with the Fabric and stuff is going further than that, but it would be nice just to see, be able to build one add-in or one app or whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm.
It includes SharePoint components and maybe some Outlook components and maybe a Teams component. And it all sort of, you can roll it out and deploy in one hit and you've got those hooks into all those different places across the platform.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. It would be nice to have one, like have a much more unified extension story, especially if you were, especially from like Office. I mean, the ones you mentioned there between Office 365 UI, Teams, SharePoint, Outlook, that's all Office.
Yeah.
And it would be nice to see them all have a single way of doing it. They've gotten close where it's pretty much all webbish kind of based.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. But
they're all a bit different.
Yeah, it is.
And you can't build one thing and deploy it and have components that roll out across all those things.
No, you got separate installs for everything.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay.
What's your second wish?
Cars open up to IoT. So there are lots of cars in the world, but their extensibility is not very good yet. Mm-hmm. You take Tesla even, right? You have one.
Mm-hmm.
It's got lots of things in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yet it's not very open to IoT, like APIs and data coming off it and integration with other things in your house and all that sort of stuff, right? Like the opportunities there, I think, are really interesting. But the car manufacturers haven't really opened themselves up to this yet. Yeah. I want things to happen when my car comes home, right? And right now I've got to do a bunch of extra stuff to make that happen. Mm-hmm. But I think car manufacturers could really participate in the sort of the Internet of Things to make cars smarter and also make homes smarter based on what cars are doing and all that sort of stuff. So you could have home automation based on, you know, cars being in the garage and things. And to do that now, you need a bunch of different devices and extra things added. But cars could participate in that, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Your car could be smarter.
Your car could be smarter. I mean, yeah, even with Tesla, it's probably the most advanced in that space.
Yeah.
You're right. They don't do that. There is no API that we can talk to. There is a community-driven API that is reverse engineered from the app that we have access to, then we can do that kind of stuff. But going back to the earlier point, you know, that stuff that I would be able to like kind of do an if this, then that, or hook it up via smart things to say, when this happens, then do this.
Yeah. I mean, hell, Tesla has a Ethernet TCP IP based network in it between all the devices that people have jacked into, right? And admittedly, you're probably voiding your warranty and all that sort of stuff. It's like a home office network inside your car between all of the different things, and that's how it works. And it's a smart idea, right? I like that, but we don't really have much access to it or be able to pull information off it even.
Yeah. Read access would be nice. So
lots of opportunity there. That's one of my wishes.
Ah, two good wishes.
Yeah. So onto your wishes, AC. What do you got for us?
I love the Chrome browser, but man, I really wish they would go on a diet.
Is it becoming IE?
It's not becoming IE. Is it? Because it's still good.
Snap.
No, but I mean I get why people complain about the fact that Chrome, it's got a huge memory footprint. It's still going to be my preferred browser. I still like it. You know, between the mobile client and the desktop client, it's still my preference. I love the fact though that Firefox has had a recent update that is getting a ton of really good press for being not only blazing fast, and I say a recent update like in the last month, but it's blazing fast, it's light on memory consumption. So I think that all of that, I think, is really, really good because, you know, competition drives a lot of this stuff. I don't think that Edge is doing anything that's very, sorry to the Edge guys, but there's nothing from what I'm seeing from Edge that's at all remotely interesting to me. In terms of really pushing the needle forward, it still is just...
I see no upside.
For Edge?
Yeah.
I don't either. Yeah.
I don't know what their differentiator is, but I don't see it.
They're already on Windows 10. And that's the only thing that I see, which isn't a big deal to me, but...
So that's saving me 3 minutes of my life.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Edge is a great browser to download Chrome. So,
anyways. Yeah, no, I agree. I did a diet exercise with Chrome the other day. There's a setting, I can't remember what it's called now, I'll have to dig it up, but there's a setting where when you exit Chrome, it closes all of those background processes for all of the apps that you've got, you know, the add-ins and what have you that you've got loaded into Chrome. Mm-hmm. So when you actually quit Chrome, it like quits all of those background processes as well.
Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's interesting too because you don't have much visibility into what Chrome is doing. And the V8 engine, which is the JavaScript engine that Chrome uses, the V8 engine is used by Node, which is also part of that Electron client, which is what Visual Studio Code is based on, which is what Slack is based on, and so many other apps. Teams is based on. So you can't really tell, like, oh, Chrome sucks. It's like, it's not Chrome that sucks. It's that you use lots of things that are using the same engine. So, but it shows up as Chrome. So yeah, I don't have a really good picture on it. I'm not defending Chrome. I'm just hoping that, hey, look, there's optimization work that can be done. And frankly, the Chrome guys are pretty freaking smart. So they should be able to clean this up a bit.
Fair. I like it. Number two, what do you got for us?
I have a whole plethora of Azure wishes, and this is going to be the subject of a blog post that I've got and coming up in January. But my winter Azure list is, first of all, I would like to see more Azure services be shipped in as far as they use, like, today we have emulators, like an emulator for functions and an emulator for different things. I would like to see those emulators stop being shipped, and I would like to see containers be shipped instead, so that if I want to be able to play with a local instance of .db, I don't want to have to install something because I need a Windows machine, or same with functions. Be fired up via container. Containers are a great way to distribute that stuff. Let me do that.
Yeah, got it.
That's a big one. The other one, a big one for me, is around the Azure portal. I like the Azure portal, but there are two aspects to it that drive me up the freaking wall. One is there is no way to do multiple things at once.
Yep.
And it is an absolute freaking nightmare to try and, like, you dive into some one thing with a blade and I feel like you go way down this path and have to come way back out of this path. Yep. And it's like going to the mall with your family and saying, like, stay right here. I'm going to go to one store. And I run to the store and get my stuff done and I come back and find everybody going, okay, here's my stuff. I'll be right back in another store to go to.
No, it's worse than that even. It's, you leave your family in the middle of the mall, your wife asks you to get something from a particular store that you're going to. So you run to the other end of the mall, you go into the store and you're like, cool, I need this. And then, oh crap, what did my wife ask for again? So you have to run all the way back and ask again. And then, oh, I did this yesterday. I was creating a two virtual machines. And I created the first one and everything was going well. Everything's going great. Go to create the second one. I'm like, shit, what did I call the first one? I can't remember what I called the first one. And I was doing it not on the command line, right? So I couldn't just whip open another terminal and do that. So then I had to zip all the way back out. Just remember the sort of the naming pattern that I used. And it just drove me crazy. Some would rightfully argue that if we had any nerd points, we'd be using the command line for this. It doesn't mean that we don't have negative idea or suggestions for the Azure portal.
I like the mobile app. I love the mobile app that they have because it's easy to be able to very quickly get to your different resources, spin up a VM. Like I have a VM that I created, a nice powerful Windows VM when I need to do Windows-based stuff. I just start that thing up via my phone. I don't go to the portal and do it because I can get to it faster via the mobile app. So that's one challenge I have with it. The other part that I have with the mobile app or with the Azure portal is that it's, I find it to be a lot of the interfaces very confusing. I know how to build a machine, but man, Windows VMs or any VMs in Azure, to be fair, I've played with EC2 on AWS and I play with it over on the Google Cloud platform as well. It ain't any better. It is all of these different things. We have got so many things. I feel like I've walked into the biggest Chinese buffet when I go to create a VM in any of these public clouds, like going, here's everything you can create. And I'm like going, Jesus, how many different kinds of rice are there? Right? Yeah. Stuff like that. So that's a big thing for me.
You know, one pet peeve I've got, since we're on pet peeves about the portal, one pet peeve I've got is when you go to create something and it gives you that little search box about what you want to create, I wish there was a toggle right there that was like, don't show me anything except from Microsoft.
Yeah.
Because right now you type in like Windows or whatever, because if you want to create a Windows virtual machine and you just want, you know, like Windows 10, Windows Server, 2012, 16, data center, blah, 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 right? Instead, I get like pages of, pardon my French, junk from other vendors with packaged solutions. Like if I wanted those, I would go look for them.
Okay, here you go. I want to create something with storage. I type in STOR and then Store Simple comes up. And I'm like, I don't want storage. I want storage.
Storage, yeah.
So, give me that kind of filter between the two.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those are my wishes.
Nice wishes.
Yeah. We can wish a lot. I love that. Well, I can't say that saying. Anyway. Okay. We have one more thing to cover.
We do. Dun, dun, dun.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users in organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
Mr. CJ, I think we're going to have this is a funny little story here. It's time for our picks, our first picks of 2018. And I have been sitting on a pick now for about 2 weeks. I thought that I found the most epic pick. And wait, I had a little text conversation with you. I'm like going, oh my God, that's it. Picks are over. I've nailed it. You're done. You can't touch it. I have the best pick ever.
Would you like me to read your text?
Oh my God. This was...
Let me see if I can find it. Where did it go?
I declare I have the best. Here you go. I just found it. I declare I have the best, most epic pick for the next podcast. Gauntlet thrown down. Give up now. Throw in the towel. Put in a down payment on the coffin. Your game won't hold up. Boom. And then what you come back with, do you want to keep it a surprise? I'm like, surprise, my present for you. It's a 61-minute video, but you'll have to set time aside to watch the entire thing. I'm going to tease you. Don't Google it. The presentation, the space, the computer. I'm not telling you anything about it. And your response?
Oh, the Apollo guidance computer video that just came out.
My response right away, damn it. God, you've already seen it.
As soon as you mentioned video, I knew exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, so this is our shared pick. I'm going to declare our shared pick. This is a 61-minute conversation where it's a presentation from these two guys who really pick apart and explain the entire Apollo guidance computer that was used to get to the moon and land and come back. And it's done in a style that is very easy to consume. They've done a bunch of other like 60-minute, like kind of how, think like how it works kind of a thing. And it was awesome. I saw it pop up on Hacker News or on Reddit. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. I hope CJ hasn't seen this.
I watched just little clips of it. I haven't sat down and watched the whole thing yet. So that is definitely on my watch list because, man.
It's really good. It's really, really good.
That stuff. Love it.
Okay.
Give us a sec. It was just so funny how it landed. Oh. So good. Oh. You're like, boom, go home. You loser. Like, you got nothing on this. What? You mean Apollo guidance computer video? I got you.
All right. Okay. Why don't you throw one at us?
Sure. I got two Ars Technica articles are my picks that I've been doing a bit of reading over Christmas and New Year and really loved these two articles. The first one is Stealth Turns 40, looking back at the first flight of HAVBLUE, which is code name for what ultimately became technology that would roll into the F-117 stealth fighter that everybody's probably familiar with. This is the project that came before that, and it's really interesting article. It talks about the different players that were involved, where the technology sort of came from, some of the mathematics that came to play or came to bear to make this possible, the companies that were involved with DARPA and the US defense programs that sort of played into this, and ultimately that Lockheed Skunk Works wasn't part of this program and sort of built this prototype on their own on their own dime and became kind of the leading player in the space for a little while. So it's a really interesting article. It happens that this stuff started around when we were born.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no surprise that people thought they were seeing UFOs out over Nevada. Let's put it that way, because at the time it probably looked like a UFO. Mm-hmm. And but it's really interesting about the programs, Project Harvey, and what ultimately became HAVBLUE. It's just fascinating.
This is a great, I saw this one the other day as well, or yesterday, or recently, and same thing. I couldn't put this one down. This is a great, great article.
Yeah, I mean, they talked about, you know, the first time they stuck it on a radar range to go test it, and they could see the pole, but not the aircraft sitting on the top of the pole, all that sort of stuff. And they thought there were problems, but it turns out, no, it was just the radar signature of like an eagle's eyeball. There you go. Anyway, so Stealth Turns 40, looking back at the first flight of HAVBLUE.
Awesome. I'll throw one of mine in there.
Go for it.
I just finished an awesome book called American Kingpin, The Epic Hunt for the Criminal Mastermind Behind Silk Road.
Ooh, that does sound interesting.
So Silk Road, you're familiar with this, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so Silk Road, for those of you who aren't familiar, was a website that was relatively recent. It was started in, I think, 2011, 2012, and by a guy named Ross Ulbricht. And it was a place for you to, it's pretty much the Wild West. I mean, you could buy anything that you wanted ultimately on this site, from drugs to weapons to even hiring assassinations, you name it. You could do anything that you could possibly think of on this site. Absolutely fascinating. The story really got behind the scenes of how the site came to be, how he was, you know, this hardcore libertarian, that how the site grew, issues that he dealt with, the paranoia about, you know, trying to make sure that you were protected if you need to be protected, and to be able to hide it or disappear if you need to disappear. Mm. And then it's done really interesting. Make sure that if you do go listen to this or read it, make sure that you read the prologue, which is at the end of the book. And it's not the epilogue, it's the prologue, but it's at the end. And the reason why it's at the end is because if you read the prologue before the book, it talks about how they did all the research to find everything about this and to do all the research, but it gives away a lot of the story if you don't know the backstory. I mean, I was familiar with Silk Road. I was familiar who Ross was and what happened, who's now in a federal prison for the rest of his life. But I was better listening to the book than it was actually, you know, reading how they actually did the research on it. He's already given a lot of stuff away. So,
gotcha.
Fascinating book, American Kingpin by Nick Bolton and Will Dameron about Silk Road.
Cool. That sounds really cool. Speaking of backstories, my next pick is another Ars Technica article called How Hotmail Changed Microsoft and Email Forever. It just talks about the story of Hotmail and how it came to be and how Microsoft went through the acquisition of it and all that sort of stuff and the interesting challenges that Microsoft faced, because when they bought Hotmail, it wasn't a Windows-based product. It was based on FreeBSD, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that, and so, and how it influenced the development of Windows NT and the kernel and all that sort of stuff. And it was just a really interesting article, the fact that it had such an impact on Microsoft and the world in terms of email, but also on Windows, that sort of stuff I just found really interesting. So it's called How Hotmail Changed Microsoft and Email Forever.
That's interesting. I have to go back and read that. I didn't see that one.
Yeah, I mean, if you're part of the industry back then, you sort of saw some of this going on, but it was just kind of interesting getting a reminder of how far we've come.
My last pick is funny. It's a kind of a playoff of something else, that a Christmas present that my wife gave me. I sent you a picture of this. There was a poster that she got me called the Chart of Cosmic Exploration.
Oh yeah,
and it's a picture of the solar system, and it shows every single spacecraft that we've sent out and where they went and what the exploration was. And it's one of those posters. I'm glad it was a poster, not something on my computer, because I've got it printed up and I've got it framed on my wall in my office. And I've found myself walking over to it and you just get right up on it, like trying to see these different details about it. Well, the other day I found another link on Reddit. Actually, I found this last night or this morning, and it's called Cosmic Journeys. And it's a similar thing, but it shows the relationship of these different probes that we've sent out from Earth, that's kind of an oxymoron. We couldn't send them from anywhere else. But these different probes and stuff that we've sent from Earth to different planets, to the sun, to asteroids, to comets. And it shows the different things that went out, but it also gives you a relation of how many things we've sent out. So you can see, like, how many things we've sent to the moon, how many things we've sent to really orbit the Earth, how many things we've sent to Mars, and how few things we've sent to Neptune, to Saturn, in relation to these other ones. It's a fascinating chart. I found the high-res version of it. The link on Reddit was not a very detailed picture, but this picture is from National Geographic. And I'm trying to find the actual link of if there's an article associated with this to make sure you give them the associated credit. But I found the link to the high-res images on a site called thevisualloop.com.
Yeah, gotcha.
But it's freaking awesome. I saw that. I thought that you may find this interesting too. So.
Yeah, for sure. I'm definitely going to take a look at this. Looks awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Cool. Well, CJ, that's a hell of a long show for our first show of 2018.
Yeah, sorry about the time.
Hey, we had a lot of stuff to cover here. We got a epic news that we had to drop. Looking back at 2017, looking forward to 2018, couple picks. I'm excited about this year, man.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was interesting to look back and a little bit further forward. And yeah, I think we went long with Meltdown and Spectre landing. If we hadn't had to cover that in this show, we probably would have been much better off time-wise, but kind of hard to leave that one out.
Yeah, important stuff.
Yeah.
Well, cool, man. Hey, Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to all of our listeners, and we'll be back next week.
Yes, wishing you all a great 2018.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3, and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.